Up next, the news you can use from YAA.
It's your 30-minute fix for all your car questions,
industry news, and tips you can use when buying your next vehicle.
We're your hosts, Ray and Zach Shevska, the founders of YAA.
We're here every weekday, live at noon Eastern. Check us out at joinyaa.com. Come on! Get in! Well, it's noon here in Ventnor, New Jersey, and this is news that you can use from YAA with your hosts, Zach and Ray, and you are, because on your shirt it says, I am. Yes, you are. I don't know what that means,
all right, Dad.
But you are.
Federal government doing federal government things. We got a lot of news this morning, Dad. We have a mixture of interest rates rising, so I want to talk about that with you. We also have the Senate passing a semiconductor bill, the CHIPS Plus Act. We also have pieces that tie in with EV tax credits getting extensions today. So lots of things from our federal government to react to this morning. Did you get a chance to peek at any of those articles?
I did, and I saw someone else who got extensions. That would be Jimmy Butler. I don't know if you've seen his new hairdo, but he got extensions as well.
I did not see that, Dad. Let's start with the semiconductor news. $52 billion, $2 billion of which going towards legacy chips needed to for automakers. This is pretty big news.
I would say it's big news and about 2 years too late. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't utilize this money to actually improve America's capabilities in producing and manufacturing chips to the point where they're affordable. And can be sold within the confines of the great United States of America.
The reason you're saying it's 2 years too late is because it takes a little while for those chip fabrication plants to actually get turned on and be supplying chips to automakers and other manufacturers. That at least 2 years from starting a fab to getting a fab stood up.
Yep, usually 2 to 3 years. It's you know, that you can say, hey, here's the money, but you know, these chip manufacturers, they have to go out and they have to find the land on which to build these fabs. That takes time. Then they have to build the fabs, and they have to train their staff. And yeah, so the whole thing normally takes 2 to 3 years. But it's a good sign that we're bringing manufacturing back to this country so that domestically we can produce the things that we need for other industries in this country. We found out over the last couple of years that it's not always good to depend on foreign manufacturers so that our domestic manufacturing capabilities can continue at the rate that we need them to be producing items.
There's an article in Automotive News this morning. Toyota, who's always been kind of the bell at the ball in terms of production capacity and their capabilities to get things shipped off to the retail side, that they are struggling mightily in their home country of Japan to actually produce things. And they're actually pushing more and more of their production to offshore capabilities that they have, whether it be in North America, Latin America, South America, et cetera. I mean, it's fascinating to see that we are now pushing to have more capability here in the United States. But to your point earlier, this is about, unfortunately, 2 years too late. We should have kicked this off immediately, but who could have seen this coming? Obviously, it's also not just chips. It's other raw materials. And you and I have talked about that ad nauseum in the past, but we've heard it from our own community. The chips are starting to become more plentiful. It's all the other materials needed to actually produce vehicles. But at least we have lots of money being thrown at this problem now. And that, generally speaking, I'm going to say is a good thing.
You would think. And hopefully the money gets spent and used wisely. And we really do use it to the benefit of American manufacturing, because it would be wonderful for us to become less dependent on others for the things that we need and for our ability to be able to produce the things and manufacture the things that we need.
100%, Dad. Now, we've got in the comments here hitting on another big piece of legislation. This comes from Casey saying, for the new Senate bill, are PHEVs, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, still included in getting the incentives? Not many news publications made any mention of plug-in hybrid EVs. Pops, do you know the details on what's going on with EV tax credits? If you don't, I've got it queued up on my
Do you want the one-word answer?
What's the one-word answer?
No. No, I don't know.
Cool. Let's take a quick peek at it because this is pretty big news. If you go to joinyaa.com/EV, it'll actually take you to the latest news on EV tax credit stat. So unfortunately, we're not going to have $12,500 tax credits like had been proposed last year. But as part of the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, let the irony set in here that we have the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 where we incentivize buying things. I'm not quite sure.
Well, but that's pretty funny because IRA, shouldn't people have IRAs?
They really should. They really should. And we've got Justin here in the chat.
And now everybody has the availability of an IRA through the Inflation Reduction Act.
100%. Thank you, Justin, for being here. The YAA Electric Channel is your primary source for all EV news. Justin likely thinks that they will be included, but here are the updates, Dad. Okay. Sales tax credits are going to be back for Tesla, GM, and Toyota, who has just started or will be phasing out their tax credits because they've hit the 200,000 vehicle cap. You're now going to have sales tax credits, if this passes the House, for Tesla, GM, and Toyota EVs moving forward. That's huge because Tesla and GM haven't had those sales tax credits for a while now.
That is correct. And the $4,500 in extra credits that the government wanted for vehicles that were built in unionized plants was taken out of the legislation, correct, which thrilled Tesla and Toyota.
We've also got some income restrictions. So individual tax filers have to have $150,000 or less in gross income, or joint filers under $300,000 to qualify. You also have this will be implemented at the point of sale instead of on taxes, which is an interesting change. In order to get the full credit, the EV needs to be assembled in North America. The majority of the battery components need to come from North America, and it must contain a certain percentage of minerals from countries with free trade agreements with the U.S. So there's a little bit of your, nationalism there. Used EVs would be eligible for a $4,000 federal tax credit. That's new.
Yes.
Vans, SUVs, and trucks with MSRPs up to $80,000 qualify. Sedans priced up to $55,000 qualify. And this actually has the support of Senator Joe Manchin, who has been a holdout to passing prior legislation. Think back to the Build Back Better bill. So you have in the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 a heck of a lot of money going towards incentivizing the purchasing of EVs.
Well, so the good news is that if you're looking at a Hummer, you're not getting a tax credit. If you're looking at many Ford Lightnings, you're not getting a tax credit. The tax credit is based on trying to make these vehicles affordable for the vast majority of Americans by keeping the price points below $55,000 for non-trucks. So if they can keep the price point at $54,995, which is where they'll be. And then you get a $7,500 tax credit at time of sale. Suddenly that vehicle's become $47,500. It makes it a little more affordable than what we've seen in the past.
Indeed. Let's talk about another thing that the federal government is helping to move along, which would be interest rates. That the Fed funds rate, as expected, 0.75 basis point increase yesterday, Dad. Obviously, there's implications for all sorts of loans, whether it's a personal loan, a mortgage, an auto loan. We'll talk a little bit about what we're seeing in the auto markets already, but we are seeing interest rates go up. That was to be expected.
Yes, absolutely. And that's 75 basis points or 0.75%.
Thank you. Yeah, 0.75 of a basis point would be truly nothing.
Exactly. Wouldn't even be worth the paper it was typed on. but yes, and the Fed is looking to raise the rates again later in the year. They want to get to a Fed rate of 3.5%, which they consider to be neutral. It doesn't. And by neutral, that means the rates aren't so low that it stimulates the economy, and the rates aren't so high that it slows down the economy.
Tricky job. So
I would say, and if they're off one way or the other, things could get ugly quickly. But time will tell if they are correct in their assumptions.
We've got an article from Cox Automotive. Let's take a quick peek at that. They're talking about the implications of rising interest rates on auto loans debt. I think there's a few interesting pieces in this article. The term length of a loan determines the impact of a change in rates on the average payment. The longer the loan term, the greater the payment inflation. A 1-point change in a 30-year mortgage has a 12% impact on the average payment, all other factors equal. A 1-point change on a 6-year auto loan has only a 3% impact on the average payment. So obviously, the longer you're holding the loan, the more interest you're going to be paying, the bigger a deal that 1-point increase is. Therefore, the rate movement that has... Go ahead, Pops.
No, I was going to say, you know, I never really looked at it in those terms, but when you see it, it's a stark contrast. But even, and there are those, you know, when we talk about the 0.5% that the wholesale values have gone down, and they go, well, it's only 0.5%. There are those who are going to say, well, it's only a 3% increase. But as we know, the average new car payment today is well over $700 and approaching $750 a month for a 6-year note. So, you know, 3% starts to add up much more quickly than a lot of people would say or suggest.
Also, as typical auto loans get stretched out over more and more, and here you go. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
96 month plans have been observed. Right. So as auto loans get stretched out longer and longer, that 1 point matters more and more and more, the longer you're paying off that loan.
It does.
And also when you're financing like extended warranties and tire and wheel protections and additional dealer markup. Okay. When your loan basis amount goes up and also the principal, goes up. I mean, that's also another factor to consider.
I read this article and I noticed a number of things down towards the bottom of the article to me are things that we have been talking about for quite some time. And I'm so glad that an esteemed economist such as Jonathan Smoak pretty much said what we've been saying.
Maybe he's a fan of the show. Let's keep reading through this because it is interesting.
If he's not, Zach, he should be.
The rate movement has already happened. That has already happened has had a much more negative impact on the real estate market than on the auto market. That 2.5 percentage point change in mortgage rates has caused a 30% increase in the average payment. That negative impact is evident in the home sales data as new and existing home sales were down 15% year over year in June. Through mid-July, the average auto loan rate has increased by about 1.5 percentage points for the year. That means the average payment, all else being equal, has increased by just shy of 5% due to the Fed's actions. With rates expected to increase even further before year-end, financing costs will make purchases more challenging, especially at lower price points and in the used vehicle market where rates are often higher. That reminds me that Ally Financial mentioned in their quarterly earnings, they're targeting an 8% on average used car interest rate is what they're expecting. Which seems, awfully high. However, the key issue for the new vehicle market up until now has not been demand or affordability, but limited production because of supply chain challenges with no evidence yet of inventory building. New vehicle demand is at least keeping up with slowly growing deliveries. If new vehicle loan rates increase further by as much as 2 full points, demand could diminish just as production and product availabilities improve. I think this is... this could be spot on. You could see interest rates going up at the same time as actual manufacturing capabilities come back online. That leads to prices going down significantly, at least they should.
Typically, yes.
The higher rates will lead to lower new vehicle sales. That higher rates will lead to lower new vehicle sales is not a foregone conclusion. As a new market has shifted to become more concentrated in higher price points, the industry benefits from having higher income and higher credit quality buyers who are less negatively impacted by the current inflation trends, aka Pops, like you said, what we've been saying, which is the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, the rich people can still buy cars. That's what they're saying. And that's
exactly what he just said.
And that's what's keeping the market afloat. Continue to read, please.
We've got here at this end of the credit spectrum, the limitation on transactions has been supply, and the limitation going forward is likely to be more about confidence and capability. In the used vehicle market, higher rates and inflation impact on subprime buyers are preventing demand from improving. Even as vehicle prices decline, used vehicle inventories have moved closer to normal levels and used vehicles are depreciating again. In our bifurcated
Wait for 1 second. Read that sentence again, because we take a lot of crap for saying that prices are going down. We're not the only ones saying it. So please read that sentence again.
Used vehicle inventories have moved closer to normal levels and used vehicles are depreciating again.
Go figure.
In our bifurcated economy, used vehicle buyers are more likely to be more negatively impacted by higher prices for energy, food, and rent. The declining subprime share of transactions reflects this pressure. With auto loan rates continuing to rise, the U.S. vehicle market is becoming even more dependent on higher priced product and higher income buyers. As a result, the dream of a new vehicle is fading from view for more American households. Also, and not captured in this, but relevant and tied in, Dad, we're seeing higher delinquency rates, of course, amongst subprime borrowers. Igor was actually just texting me the other day. He said that all of the people he's been talking to, they expect subprime delinquency rates to go north of 10%. If they're not already there, they're expecting the next round of data to be north of 10%. 1 in 10 subprime auto loans going delinquent. That does not paint a good picture for the average American and what they can afford when it comes to mobility.
It does not. And that last line or that last paragraph, which is buried at the end, is truly probably the most important paragraph in there, okay? That's what the problem is. The problem is that more and more households, more and more people feel as if they cannot participate, and so that the chasm between the haves and have-nots is only going to grow wider. And that's the real problem. That should have been the first damn paragraph, and that should concern everybody. Now, I'll tell you who it doesn't concern. It doesn't concern those who have. But the vast majority who don't, at a certain point, are going to stand up and say, we're mad as hell. We're not going to take this anymore. We're not going to put up with this anymore. The rich just can't keep getting richer at the expense of the middle class. And that's what's happening in this country. And the middle class at a certain point is just not going to put up with it anymore. And that shouldn't be okay with the manufacturers, with the retailers. That shouldn't be okay with anybody. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. I'm sorry.
I was enjoying that, Pops. Let's actually put it into context, though. Name a brand, and it starts with an N and ends with Eson. That is a relatively economical brand. Thank you.
Would that be the company formerly known as Datsun, but now known as Nissan?
So we've got from Cox Automotive the analysis of Nissan's Q2 performance. And I'm just going to jump all the way down to not incentives, not how many vehicles they've sold, just their average transaction price. Nissan's overall average transaction price rose 13% quarter over quarter to north of $36,000. Four models had double-digit average transaction price increases. The Frontier pickup truck, the Pathfinder SUV posted gains of 20 and 27% respectively. That Nissan no longer has a sub $20,000 car. The Versa is now transacting at $21,400. Infiniti's average transaction price up 20%, nearly $60,000 is the average transaction price. So Nissan, one of the most inexpensive brands in the market, has a $36,000 average transaction price. And Justin, you are spot on. Nissan executives have said they intend to make Nissan more premium. Their new Ariya electric vehicle is example number one. This is such an interesting inflection point, Dad. Everyone is all in on EVs. We know fundamentally, because of how expensive they are to produce, EVs are going to be more expensive to the consumer. We also have Jonathan Smoke and us making it very clear that vehicles and owning a car is a have and have not option. And then you have manufacturers that like Ford, who are doing essentially rent a car instead of leasing a car. The way we approach mobility is changing right before our eyes, and it's still going to take years, not a decade, but you're seeing, I mean, everyone who's a part of this community and watches these streams, like, we're all seeing it happen right in front of us. You're not going to own anything. You're going to have this thing that you rent, and you're going to be happy.
Well, and the thing is, you know, that the Nissan's saying, well, they want to become more premium. I'm just going to cite a quick example of a brand that thought they could, and, well, they didn't, and they can't. And that brand is the brand, the vehicle that I drive, many years ago. 8-9 years ago, we had a change in Mini at the top of their advertising department, the vice president in charge of advertising. And he came up with the concept of what he liked to call smart premium, okay? That Mini was going to become a smart premium brand. Now, as somebody who sold Minis, I couldn't tell you what the hell smart premium is supposed to mean, but that was the catchphrase in everything we did. And I asked him at a meeting one day, I said, we can proclaim ourselves smart premium all we want. We can advertise ourselves as smart premium all we want. But if the general public ain't buying what you selling, what good is it? I said, where are we going to be? And he said, well, if they're not buying what I'm preaching, he says, well, we're effed. Well, guess what? He was out in a year. Okay. You know, you can say you want to be premium, but if the public's not buying that you're premium, guess what? You're not premium. Okay. Just saying it doesn't make it so. And somebody's got to realize that some of these manufacturers, that there's a vast majority of Americans that can't afford to buy cars. But if you made them less expensive, it would appeal to a large percentage of the population, and they will buy those cars, and they will make you a successful manufacturer. Don't abandon the majority of Americans, okay? Don't just cater to the upper class. Cater to those of us who need the most help. And when I say those of us, I consider myself middle class, so I'm getting squeezed. As I used to like to say, you know, we made a decent living between your mother and I, and I still looked at us as being the working poor. You know, we made a decent living. We tried to take you kids on vacations every year. We struggled. We lived paycheck to paycheck so we could provide you with the things that you didn't even know you wanted. And so that you wouldn't have to want for things, and so that you wouldn't have to know that maybe the things we were doing we really couldn't afford, which we couldn't have, but we did them anyway, because my theory was never let the lack of money stop you from doing the stuff you want to do. But my point is that can't go on forever.
Yeah.
And there's a market that needs to be served, and we just... You just can't abandon that market. You just can't tell all those people, you're not coming along for the ride because we don't give a damn about you. That's not Pops, how this should work.
Dale is spot on. We need a sound effect for when you step up and step down off of the soapbox. Also, Pops, we need to film a video that goes out on the YAA main channel of you explaining what's going on in the industry and how, you know, there is this divide happening and how we need to not let that happen. So I'm adamant about getting you on back on the camera so we can film a video for the main channel. Good job preaching that. That's really important.
Well, I just think at times we lose sight, you know, we lose sight of what's important for all of us and not just ourselves. You know, I'll use a word you like. Everybody gets siloed. Everybody gets this narrow field of vision, and that vision only for most of us only includes what's important to us. Well, you know, one of the things I learned from your mother, God bless her, was that it's not necessarily what's important to us. The importance is how we can impact, influence, and help others. There's you gain more from that than just concentrating on yourself. At least that's what I've found over the years, and thankfully your mother helped teach me that.
That's what we're trying to do here, live on her legacy. Igor, flying back have horrible Wi-Fi. I hope you see my comment, Zach. 4% plus are now delinquent of prime auto loans. We'll look forward to hearing more from Igor. And JNLW reminding us, oh, yeah, and you're going to subscribe to your air conditioning. So just get excited for that, middle class person. All right, Pops, can we switch gears for a second?
Of course we may. Really? You got to be kidding me.
Two good stories for really you got to be kidding me today. The first has to do with the CFPB. We talk a lot about the FTC and what they're doing with the rules and regulations for car dealers. Dad, Hyundai settles CFPB auto credit reporting case for $19 million. Issues span 2.2 million car buyers, lessee accounts. CFPB says Hyundai admitted no wrongdoing, about $13 million in restitution going back to consumers. What is the long and short of what's going on over at Hyundai?
Hyundai Capital America was not reporting to the credit bureaus accurately the standing of their customers. Oftentimes, there was misinformation being transmitted to the credit bureaus, which would negatively impact people moving forward. People were shown as being late that weren't. They tried to over
lessee amounts. Yep.
Oh yeah, the lessee amounts were stated inaccurate. At a higher amount than what it really was, which limits future credit availability because you know everything is tied to debt to income ratios. You don't know this, but many years ago, leases didn't even count against consumer credit. So
really?
they weren't even reported to the bureau. So one of the reasons people leased 30 years ago was it actually gave them greater access to even more credit because a lease wasn't considered a credit obligation. That obviously has changed. And the way leases are reported to a credit bureau, if you have, say, your payment's $400 a month and it's a 36-month lease, what is that? $14,400, something like that, whatever it is. That would be the total amount of your obligation. So Hyundai Capital America was actually inflating that amount, which was limiting future credit availability and misreporting how people were paying. And oftentimes, if they reported somebody as delinquent, they didn't issue a start date as to when that occurred. So there would be no end date as to when that would fall off the credit report. It's just a mess. But, you know, who wouldn't spend $19 million without admitting any wrongdoing? Because everything was perfect. It was just perfect. But it's so much easier just to write that big check.
Maybe justice is right, Pops. That's because they have 12-year-olds making out the reports. This is a terrible joke, but also a fantastic joke. Hyundai, Dad, has had a lot of bad news, whether it's their engine fires, now this CFPB fine that they're paying in the restitution, or the fact that they are accused of having child labor help to manufacture their vehicles. Where was that, down in Alabama?
Yes. And at their Alabama plant, they were allegedly... In any number of cases, they were employing children, and it was a supplier of theirs that, well, they were the majority owner in, children between the ages of 12 and 15. And the only reason that they got caught is, well, the children weren't showing up for school because, I don't know, they were at work.
That's so sad. The other really, you got to be kidding me today, Dad. Tesla locks 80 miles of customers' battery range for $4,500 ransom. What the hell is going on here, Dad?
Well, this was a used Tesla, and originally it had, a 60 kilowatt hour battery or whatever. I don't know. And there was a battery replacement on it. And they didn't have the old battery, so they replaced it with the 90 kilowatt hour one. And that extended the range on the vehicle. And the vehicle was sold to a customer and brought it in for some type of update because of the losing 3G capability. And that's when Tesla discovered, he's getting the 90 range when he should be getting the 60 range. And the consumer said, well, no, when I bought it as a used car, it was advertised as the 90, not the 60. So anyway, Tesla wanted to charge him $4,500 to unlock that extra third of range. And the only way that this ended up being resolved was it was brought to people's attention on social media. So let's not forget that there can be pressure to be brought on companies through social media, and Tesla relented and gave him back his total range that he didn't have before.
Exactly. Tesla ended up giving him the range. And this is a thank you from Florida Man. Over 1,000 FTC comments, over 10% mentioned YAA. That's great. And that's why we're putting pressure on the FTC around their rules and pops. Jay reminding us, interesting that the attitude Ray has expressed regarding the CHIPS Act, which I happen to wholeheartedly agree with, is just the opposite of the clickbait title for the session. LOL. Jay, sometimes I'm on, sometimes I'm off. So I apologize. I try with the titles. I try with the thumbnails. But, you know, it's hit or miss. If I shoot 80% from the field during the week, 4 out of 5, that's a good week.
That is, and you are the illegitimate son of Ned Beatty and Warren Beatty. Their illegitimate son named Click Beatty.
We'll end on that, Pops. We'll be back tomorrow with Miss Kimberly Klein. Dad, I got to get you on camera. Your rant about the divergence, or as Mr. Smoke called it, the bifurcation of our economy with the haves and the have-nots. Yeah, we got to do a PSA and make people aware of what's going on here. But Pops, thanks for your time as always today. We'll be back here tomorrow at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Sound good?
With more news that you can use from, well, YAA. And thank you, honey, for, allowing me my soapbox today.
See you, Dad. See you, guys.
Thank you, everybody. See you later.
Join us again next time,
which is probably tomorrow,
to get the news you can use from YAA. YAA is your trusted source for all things auto. Thanks for listening.
See you soon.